and this is the Walk On Podcast. I'm Brent Faulkner. When I'm thirsty, nothing tastes quite as good as a nice cold Coke. Oh, it's so refreshing as I drink it. The problem is, in about 30 minutes, I'm thirsty again. So I go and I grab another Coke, and then I find myself thirsty again. And while it seems refreshing in the moment, the caffeine and the sugar in Coke actually makes me more thirsty, creating a never-ending cycle searching to quench my thirst. I think that describes how many of us live our lives, pursuing happiness by trying to fulfill one desire after the other. And often the things we turn to in an attempt to fulfill those desires are not helpful in the long term, or even could be damaging to ourselves and to others. Those are things that often the church or religion would label as sin. And you know, some religious circles place a lot of focus on sin, taking time to define what's sin and what isn't, talking about the consequences of sin, coming up with boundaries and methods to keep you from sinning. I remember when I was a youth pastor, one of the most common questions was a series of hypotheticals about different behaviors or different things. And is this sin? Or if I do this, is this sin? And how far is too far? And when does it become sin? You know, and all the questions about trying to draw this line of how far their behaviors can go to before it's labeled bad or as sin. And the real question behind all of those things is a question about desire. And I wonder if the focus that we place on sin actually can send the message that the things that we desire, the desires that drive us to those sins are actually wrong. But I wonder if sin's not really the issue. I mean, sin is simply what we turn to attempting to quench the thirst that we have. It's just that we turn to things that don't truly satisfy. But those desires underneath driving us to those choices are actually desires given by God, perhaps distorted in their expression. But at the core, they represent something that God has placed inside of us. And I wonder, instead of running from those desires, trying to fight them or squelch them or view them as adversarial, what if we let those desires teach us and point us towards what we truly thirst for? And I wonder if by placing all the emphasis just on that sinful behavior and how to fight it and how to prevent that from happening, if we're actually ignoring what the deeper desires can teach us, and how we can mature and grow in our faith by understanding those desires and learning what truly meets those and quenches that thirst and what doesn't. C.S. Lewis once gave a talk about the role our desires play in actually pointing us to God. In it, he said, "It would seem that our Lord finds our desires not too strong, but too weak. We are half-hearted creatures fooling about with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered us. Like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by an offer of a holiday at the sea, we are far too easily pleased." And I think Lewis accurately points out that the problem's not our desire. The problem is the things that we turn to satisfy that desire, and we're far too easily pleased in those things that don't truly satisfy. And perhaps that the desire itself actually points us to a deeper truth, a deeper need that only God can fulfill. So how can this play out in real life, in our own desires? Well, let's take lust and all the expressions that it takes. It could be that lust has less to do with sexual fulfillment and more to do with a desire for intimacy or connection. Or how about gossip? Could be that gossip is really a deeper desire to be seen as significant, you know, that you know something that others don't. Or even substance abuse. Substance abuse could be a deeper desire to avoid the pain of past trauma. And in all those things, if we just focus on the behavior, trying to manage it or stop it, then we may totally miss the deeper desire that that behavior is trying to point us towards. Recently, I heard about urge surfing. Behavioral therapists teach the practice of urge surfing as a mindfulness approach to addictive behaviors. Instead of ignoring or fighting these addictive urges, they teach that you can ride the urge like a surfer rides a wave. And in a non-judgmental way, you observe the urge. You don't act upon it, but you observe it, letting it rise and crest and fall away. And you approach the urge you have with curiosity and use it as a moment to take you deeper into what's going on in your mind and in your life. And I wonder if we can let our thirsts point us to something deeper. And perhaps then we can find true fullness, then fulfillment of God's presence. And then we'll see the empty satisfaction of the things that we often turn towards for what they are. The prophet Isaiah talks about this in Isaiah 55. He says, "Come, everyone who thirsts, come to the waters, and he who has no money, come, buy and eat. Come, buy wine and milk without money and without price. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which does not satisfy? Listen diligently to me and eat what is good, and delight yourselves in rich food. Incline your ear and come to me, hear, that your soul may live." The question is, what do you thirst for? And why do we so often turn to things that do not truly satisfy? It could be because we're not taking the time to let our thirsts point us and learn from them and point us to the things that are truly found in God. Revelation 22 gives a glimpse of the new Jerusalem, the moment that heaven comes to earth, the moment that God redeems and restores all things. And in that image is described a city. In the center of that city, of that new Jerusalem, is Jesus sitting on a throne. And flowing from that throne is a river with the water of life. And it describes that that river, that water, is what gives life to the city. And it feeds all the growing trees that come up along the banks of that river. And it says that those trees have leaves that are used for the medicine, for the healing of the nations. And that this river flowing from Jesus on the throne is the thing that sustains and waters the whole city. And as that metaphor closes, an invitation is given. It says, "The Spirit and the bride say, come. Let anyone who hears this say, come. And let anyone who is thirsty come. Let anyone who desires to drink freely from the water of life come." The things that we thirst for, the things that we desire, find their fulfillment, their true satisfaction in the presence of Jesus. And so the question is, what do you thirst for? The things that you desire, what are they truly pointing you towards? And how can you utilize those? How can you learn from those and let those be a thing that points you and teaches you of something that God has placed deep inside of you that He and He alone can fulfill? I want to invite you into a moment of mindful reflection and prayer to learn and to ask God to show us what our desires are telling us. So I invite you into this moment to use your imagination as you pray and let some of these images be a way that God can speak to us and point us to His truth. So as we start, I invite you to take a deep breath. And I invite you to find a posture where you can be relaxed yet attentive. And as we begin, ask God to bring to mind a behavior you've been running from or trying to fight. There may be several that come to mind, but pick just one. Now, with your hands held in front of you, imagine that you're holding that behavior. And imagine that behavior as a dirty, beat-up chunk of wood. One side is a little charred from a fire. Some of the wood is splintered off on the other side. You can feel the rough edges in your hands as you hold it. Now imagine that you hand that chunk of wood, representing this behavior, you hand that to God. There's no judgment or shame in this. You're simply an observer. You're taking a position of prayerful curiosity. You hand it to God. God takes it. And then God reaches in His pocket. He unfolds a pocket knife and He begins to whittle on that chunk of wood that is your behavior. And with each pass, the knife, guided by His strong hands, carves off shavings, revealing fresh wood underneath. You realize each shaving represents the guilt you carry, the embarrassment you feel, the shame or baggage associated with that behavior. And as you watch each shaving fall to the floor, you begin to feel lighter and hopeful. You can't quite make out what God is carving in His hands, but you eagerly wait. And finally, with one finishing cut, God folds up His knife, puts it back into His pocket. Then He looks you in the eyes, warmly smiles, and places the carving back into your hands. That carving is the deeper desire underneath all the behavior and guilt. You open your hands and you gaze upon it. What is it? What is the deeper desire that God has revealed to you? And as you stare upon that carving, you begin to reflect. How can that true desire lead you further up and further in to the loving presence of God? And how might God truly be able to satisfy that desire and quench that thirst? The Spirit and the bride say, "Come." Let anyone who hears this say, "Come." Let anyone who is thirsty come. Let anyone who desires drink freely from the water of life.